So I guess we can start from the first question, which already has another question inside it, which is description of social worker. And originally, when I wrote this question, it was more to, well, I guess to think how these practices could be kind of distinguished from each other, but also maybe what does it mean to combine them into one? Well, when you write even your bio, it's written that you're an artisan. Well, now you corrected that it should be environmentalist, and we also discussed that maybe socially engaged artistic practice could be another option to describe what you do. But well, yeah, we can probably just start from talking about roles and what does it mean for an artist to be preoccupied with social questions, and what does it mean to be engaged, and how much of the engagement is in your artistic practice.
Not having gone through a traditional art education route means that my arrival at a social practice, if you like, has come from like real life experiences, as opposed to reading something in a book and deciding that that's what I wanted to do. So I grew up in pubs. And I spent a lot of time working in hospitality. And so I spent a lot of time around people. And then I realized that was being socially involved with people from different backgrounds important to my sort of daily life. But then it also began feeding into what my impressions were of how my artistic practice was related to me as a person. So it really started when I was started doing workshops on wildflower identification or sauerkraut or litter picking, things like this. And they came from me wanting to learn about these things myself and trying to find maybe post-rationally trying to find like artistic language to describe these activities that I was undertaking once I had become quite time rich. So I'd like kind of come into having loads of spare time and wanted to learn some new skills. And I don't know, I'm very like, I guess I need validation a lot just in social, just historically. And so I think I've always found that working with people as a kind of mirror, but also as a kind of something to bounce ideas from. I've always thought about this as like a way to make an idea stronger, a way to share an experience. And I think progressively I've been more and more involved with creating these sorts of frameworks that I look at, where I can like purposefully create a scaffolding that will invite people from different backgrounds. I can be more specific with the sort of people that I would like to engage with my practice. So in a way, removing a lot of the workshops from the sphere of art and working from more of like, yeah, we picked up on like social work. I guess I do like, I have worked with people with learning disabilities and I have worked with lots of people from low income backgrounds. So generally people who have sort of everyday barriers that most in society don't have traditionally, like financial, emotional and like physical barriers. And so like, I've been applying the knowledge-based practice, the skill-based learning, to groups of people with learning disabilities or from low-income backgrounds. And that has very much informed the way that I want my practice to go. Yeah, I think it like the social aspect of my work, it's that kind of outward-facing it comes from being in hospitality, you know, like working facing people and not enjoying being in an oppressive hierarchical establishment,
mm-hmm.
but enjoying working kind of with people and, you know, in a very like relaxed and sociable environment, you know, trying to create a ground for trust with different people who can then feel like they are relaxed enough, who feel comfortable enough to share experiences or to share skills with me back. So we have this kind of, try and build this sort of exchange. You know, I'm a good host.
Mm-hmm.
And so I use those skills to then create more like horizontal
mm-hmm.
sharing spaces, where it's like kind of less about my expertise, which I don't really have. You know, I'm a sort of avid amateur. You know, I don't proclaim to know everything about anything.
Maybe this is where the artistic position can be kind of seen, that you never take this position of an expert, but you're just being curious about things. One Lithuanian artist, I don't want to mention him right now, but he once said that being socially contemporary artist means that you're just constantly curious about multiple things, and being a professional amateur for short term of time.
Yeah.
Short period of time.
Yeah, that really resonates with me. And so this idea of becoming an expert has always been a bit of a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that it's always in terms of other, you know, like business or like work, career, it's always held me back, because the idea is like you have to become a professional.
Mm-hmm.
And so like with the term artist that I use for myself, it's actually very resistant to being categorized,
mm-hmm.
and to it's creating space for myself whereby I can manage other people's expectations of what I achieve. I think, you know, other people's ideas of what an artist should be is fine, because as humans naturally we categorize and we want to have control over language and each other. But I think actually the reason I use it is because it's intentionally vague. Anything that's kind of decorative or slow or emotional is kind of deemed inefficient, right? So it doesn't fit in with capital, because it's not producing something that is time effective,
mm-hmm.
or money effective. And so actually trying to learn slow methodologies, you know, I think about like pre-industrial techniques using post-consumer materials is kind of what I try, and it's kind of a good way to like summarize my sort of visual art practice, you know, in terms of like learning old skills but using like waste materials. So just over there, some like cording, plastic cording, that I learned from a friend who is like a kind of survivalist. So you just turn plastic wrappers into cord, and you can use them to like, you know, tie your boat to a dock, or you can use them to you know, keep your tent in the ground or whatever. And I think about trying to decarbonize my lifestyle as a personal choice.
Have you ever felt in your artistic path, social work, I mean environmental mm-hmm. activism mm-hmm. or social work in the way that you describe it, so mm-hmm. coming to groups, working, you know, skill sharing
mm-hmm.
methodologies, do you think that did it ever have something to do with the idea that of the lack of such services in general, these kind of somehow these skill sharing community forming, you know, mm-hmm. Just kind of very simple social activities that don't really require a lot of, you know, I don't know, preparation, just like simple meetings and gatherings, yeah. or skill sharing, that they have somehow became artistic practice.
the lack that I saw was in that, was in my own practice. You know, there was lacking sociability, there was lacking interactions, there was lacking experience building, and there was also a severe lack of public programming in galleries that was of any use or of any note. The sort of the galleries that kind of think that their social engagement is like getting people to buy stuff in their bookshop, you know, like not really having anything that is applicable or that is entertaining for people that live predominantly directly in their area. So I guess my work is like a direct reaction to, you know, feeling oppressed by like kind of the global world, basically, like being fully, totally overwhelmed by this. You know, I have like this paralysis of choice, the paralysis of like making the right decision, of living in a city where it's so expensive to even like breathe. And so I felt like the work that I was trying to create was more like this kind of space where I could have these experiences and share this time with people, and like doing something so simple as a skills workshop in a gallery. You know, I worked with, my first one was with Cell Projects in Bethnal Green in East London, and I had been going out and doing lots of like wildflower walks, and they had seen my work and they had been like, we think this would work really well as a workshop. So I proposed like a skill sharing workshop, and the simpler the task, the more room there is to create a very memorable and like dynamic. So rather than going into a workshop, which would generally be like 90 minutes with a really solid agenda with loads of information to like overwhelm everyone with my genius, I was more interested in how can I, using all the skills that I have as both a hospitality worker, but also as someone of, you know, a fair amount of privilege, you know, I can move around as I like without being challenged, and I'm very conscious of this, and I know that a lot of people can't. So how can I try and apply that into, you know, an artistic situation that is where I can take myself out of my comfort zone in order to make other people feel more comfortable. And so these very, very quickly became like, very valuable moments. You know, it wasn't necessarily about taking something concrete away from the workshop. It wasn't necessarily, you wouldn't really take like a thing that was perfect or a solid object, but it might just be that you, you know, you've been having a crap week and then you've spent an hour and a half meeting some new people, learning a bit about skill, you know, kind of opening your eyes to like a new, it's more the idea of remembering the basic, you know, the basics of pre-industrial, like why, you know, these skills that are like cost nothing.
I wanted to first maybe concentrate on skill sharing aspect, and maybe because you have used the word sharing, which means that it's not only educational or some kind of one goal oriented that you come and share your skill. It's some kind of, I think there is some kind of exchange element inscribed in this process. So maybe you can just, we already talked about that the previous time we met. So what does it mean for you to approach a person and share a skill or share some knowledge with this person? Does it, it's a kind of mutual act, right? It's never one direction oriented. So
the idea of an exchange, by definition, is one of equality.
Mm-hmm.
The value of something versus its monetary, like an object versus its monetary worth. And so that is very much already very embedded in capitalist transactions, which are very fast and faceless, and contribute to, it's like, it's unthinking, isn't it? You're just like, this is worth this. You don't challenge it. You base all the worth on how much money you've paid.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to think more about scarcity and abundance, which I contribute more to, like pre-industrial things like farming. The value of something was based on how much of it there was, and not the sort of, not necessarily the processes that it went through, although more capital has been accrued by how many more processes, how far it's travelled or how many people have touched it. So really I'm trying to like address the situation whereby we are expected to create an arbitrary value for something that is often immaterial. So working with alternative currencies, such as the first one that I was doing was when I was making ceramics, and I couldn't sell them because no one wanted to buy them because they were like, I don't know, I like them, but obviously no one else did. And so I had all these ceramics that I had in my studio. I had loads in my house that I've still got. I just had like a wealth of plant pots and salt caves and butter dishes and stuff. And I started trading them with friends who wanted them. And I thought, well, look, my friends are artists or they have like skills. Like, why should we bother trading money if I'm gonna, why should they buy something off of me if I'm gonna want something off of them back? So I started using them as like bartering tokens. Someone made a website for two plant pots. Someone fixed a bunch of my clothes for a teapot. I also swapped art with people online around the world. So sent like a few bits to like Australia and America just through Instagram. And so I was like, oh wow, this is amazing, because now I've, without spending any money, I now own artwork from different continents from artists that I like. And also my work now exists in different continents with someone who likes it. I did a show in 2015, and basically I exhibited all the artwork that I had acquired through swapping.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I felt like that was like, even though I've been swapping ever since, that was like an outcome. I'd swapped enough that I had, artwork to do a global show in a shed in South London. So that was like the basics of it. And then from there, I was thinking about, scarcity and abundance, but even less about the material, even less about like the object, the worth of like a physical object. And so I started thinking about like skill sharing and resource. Yeah, the idea that knowledge can accrue value, not in a capital sense, but in like a cultural sense, can accrue cultural worth. Teaching someone a knot and then they pass on the knowledge of a knot to someone who swaps back some sign language was one of the workshops that I did. So it was really just thinking about how you can attach like personal value to things and how that's non-financial. It might be sentimental, but it might also be practical. I'm far more concerned in my work at creating new systems, new like dynamic systems that work locally, using abundance using empathy and care as a resource that will help take care of the needs within a community.
And yeah, I presented you while I was designing this question list. I presented you this example, which is a humans app, which was created last year in Lithuania, which is like based on this idea of skill sharing and knowledge sharing. That's anyone who has some specific skill or knowledge, they could offer their service, which you would have to pay for. The platform, which is based on this idea that even skill sharing could be monetized as a resource. So kind of employed in this capitalist idea of exchange value. So just to kind of challenge a little bit this idea that we talked before, self-sufficiency could be based on skill sharing, but at the same time, skill sharing could be, you know, become another capitalized
commodity. Yeah.
Commodity. Yeah, it's a little bit pessimistic.
It's very cynical, but it's fine.
Well, maybe, do you have any, you know, should we be afraid of that? Should we be aware of, or is it just the way it is? We, you know, we continue doing what we have to, and there's this parallel thing that kind of constantly uses the ideas that come from, you know, art field, avant-garde, activism, all these grassroots, and be, like, you know,
subsumed by,
and they, yeah, and then they're kind of involved, included in these, you know, cycles of cooperation that I also kind of mentioned.
The idea of skill swapping and skill sharing is, I mean, for me, like, is a great experiment. It's a social experiment, isn't it? Like, can we build trust without the insurance of money? So can we entertain the idea of exchanging? There's two main things that I worry about with it. Is that using the internet means that, as a democratic tool, it means that you've got the tyranny of structurelessness, right? Where, so you've got it being like a horizontal platform, and then you'll have people rising to the top because of their social mobility. Others that can easily be oppressed or can be like manipulated, and so you already run the risk of like some people being better off from the transactions and some people being worse off, and who decides what the rate of exchange is. So I guess for me, like, it goes back to the idea of like trying to move. It's like simultaneously like looking backwards to look forwards. So with all of my work is about like the human, like, you know, the physical meetings or the, you know, the very close exchanges that we have, and those being experiential and lasting rather than the product of them. Yeah. So the human contact is like a big part of it.
Yeah.
I finished on two things, on one thing, right? I was thinking about sadness in late capitalism, and I've been having a few conversations with people that I know over Instagram, particularly about the comics of Jaakko Pallosvel. And how he, like, I don't know, like, we're in this all-consuming, you know, daily nightmare of, like, late capitalism that we can't see it ending. And I think the sadness of it is actually something that that might benefit using, like, reclaiming, not maybe ideas around, like, clinical depression, but definitely to talk around the language of sadness and how Jaakko, in his comics, he kind of expands on like what is the traditionally like negative emotionality of sadness. You know, it's traditionally quite flat. If you look at it, you know, and actually there's like a prism of experiences of sadness and what these look and feel like. And so we were thinking about how actually like expanding and extrapolating this, the feelings of sadness, we could as artists like reclaim that as a tool. You know, like it's used against us to like oppress us, but actually once we aestheticize it and once we like dissect it, it's something that we can share, and artists have the ability to share things in non-capital markets, right? So we can share exchanges, or we can share resources or skills or materials, and we can imagine beyond the financial worth of it. You know, it matters less to us. And so I don't know, I think that's like really kind of
it's a very hopeful thing to end.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, and even thinking about Mark Fisher, his writing, you know, like when the first time I read him, like my girlfriend gave me Capitalist Realism, and I hadn't even heard of him, to be honest. It was only a few years ago, and I was just like, I couldn't believe what I was reading, just how like eloquent and how like deeply he wrote about depression in late stage capitalism. And it was making me think, like last night when I was talking to my friend, about how in a way I'm trying to like reclaim my anxieties and my sadness and like transform them through different media, you know, debris, surplus time, you know, foraged foods or whatever. And trying to like develop my language around my sadness. And his writing helped me understand that, like, how, like, I don't know, like, how much capacity I have to like understand sadness on a wider, you know, on like a broader, it's not flat, is it? It's like there's different, you know, like developing an emotional vocabulary around things that are traditionally seen as negative, like sadness, is something that I think artists can and should do. And it's something that can't really be taken away either. Something that we can share on a non-financial level that really cannot, I don't know, I can't see how it could be like capitalized on.